This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And we are having beautiful sunshine here, and I don't blame all those people up north who want to come down here and get out of the snow, except my brother, who loves it. He called last week and he said, I had a dusting of snow. And I said, how many inches is that? And he said, 16. And since then, I think he's had another 30 inches. And he's happy. I talked to him last night and he's so happy. I couldn't take it. Anyway, I am so happy to have on the program somebody who enjoys Hawaii a bit more than the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Is he on? And I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper. You know, it's always fun when I find somebody whose book I really love, whose series I really love, because it takes me to a new place. And Robert McCaw has written this wonderful series, and this is book 4 called Treachery Times 2. It is such a good book, and I am so happy to welcome you back to the program, Bob. How are you?
I'm fine, and it's very nice to be here. I appreciate it.
Okay, are you in Hawaii, or are you someplace else?
I'm someplace else right now, but the sun is shining, and it's a lot warmer than it is in the Northeast.
Oh, yeah, and northern Michigan, because it is crazy up there, and I was appreciating the fact that I was reading a book about Hawaii, and although I understand they had a little dusting at some point. Wow, this is so exciting. The fourth book of the Koakane, I pronounced that wrong, didn't I, today? Koakane.
Well, it's Koakane, yeah.
Koakane. Yeah. And the new book, Treachery Times 2. Wow. You know, I thought when you hit your stride in book 2 and book 3, it keeps getting better and better.
Well, thank you.
This is exciting.
It's a story that got lots of components. It's about Hawaii, about the real Hawaii, about how people live out there, and some of the problems that they have, which are common to lots of places. And it's a mystery story. It's an espionage story. It's a little bit of a thriller. And it's very much about Koakane's personal struggle with his past. So those elements all come together. I'm glad you enjoyed the story.
Yeah, well, I think exactly that. It comes back sort of in some ways to full circle about the situation in his life that has, you know, really overwhelms the stories and his life, something that happened, you know, to him, and you carried it through. And now in this book, I think we really get to understand more about it, more about the situation. And I know that all the people that I've been talking to people about this series for quite a while, because people ask me, you know, they want to start a series and they want to get really involved in, and I had never really cared much about Hawaii until I started reading your books. And you're right, what you say that you're talking about the real Hawaii, not the hula dancers, in plastic straw skirts. This is, you get right into the nitty gritty, the history. I love the history that you bring in. Because there are so many things that I didn't know about Hawaii until I started reading your books.
Well, it's a very unique place in every way. I mean, it's isolated from every place else by a couple thousand miles of water. It has a unique history, and particularly a history with the United States. I mean, we actually expropriated it. We took it by force. That, like Kolokani's story about his past, is something that survives, and it's a struggle in Hawaii. There are people there who still resent the fact that we stole their country. It was an internationally recognized country for 100 years before we, for basically commercial purposes, expropriated it. That's one whole story. Then you see pieces of that in the book. You see pieces of the discovery of Hawaii. You see pieces of the struggle that Hawaiians have with their geography. I mean, we're talking about a place that's very volcanic, and you never know when Pele, the goddess of volcanism, is going to raise her head and change the course of your day, or maybe your year, or maybe your life.
And the changes are so dramatic when a volcano hits an area. It's, and the way you describe when you describe the parts when a volcano has just, you can't stop it. It just that's nature, and it goes, and it, wow, how it can wipe out homes and lives. It's, I think the way you write it, you sort of bring us back to the great eruptions over the years that make us really stop to think. I know I could never live near a volcano after reading that, even though I know everything else around it is so beautiful.
Well, it is interesting because there are places in the island where the volcanic risk is very, very high. And obviously, real estate is not its most expensive in those places. And there are people who are willing to take that risk just to have a plot of land, to have a place where they can call home. There's another interesting story about the volcanic, which I'll tell you very quickly, which is that during World War II, Mauna Loa erupted. And the Air Force was afraid that the color, the redness, the light from the volcano would attract Japanese aircraft and submarines. And so the Air Force tried to bomb the volcanic eruption into quiet. And guess what? It didn't work.
I didn't think it would. But people come up with all these ideas. Well, we have all these people who want to stop the hurricanes coming to Florida, and they're willing to do all sorts of very weird things, which in the end I don't think is going to work because Mother Nature has a way of overcoming all of your ideas. So what I like about this story, you've created characters who are relatable, who are fascinating, and throughout the series, we've gotten to know more of them. And when you first came out with this character, how did it come to you? Because it seems now, always when I read like the first book, I at that point I knew that there would be more. But I just love the way. Did you envision that it would be such a major thing? Now you're into the book 4, I'm sure book 5. There's so much to write about him and about, Kolokani and the other characters that you brought into the storylines.
Well, I practiced law for a long time, and I met some fabulous characters. And I sort of steal pieces of people that I met, people that I worked with, and clients that I had. And it taught me a lot about human nature, about our desire, which is really a compulsion, to cover up even the smallest wrongs that we do. How often do you encounter people who really come forward and say, "Yes, I did it. Sorry." It's much more likely they're going to find some way to dodge and some way to say, "No, I didn't do it," and that's. That's part of Kolokani's character, is that he has this act in his past that is terrible, but he struggles with it, and it actually makes him better in some respects because he understands the criminal mind. He's understands how criminals hide things. And at the same time, he's powered by this overwhelming guilt for what he did. And the whole story in Treachery Times 2 delves deeply into that conflict and what drives this human being. And now maybe many of us out here didn't commit the same level of crime that he did, but we all have something in our past that we would prefer not to talk about, and people hide it. And it makes for great stories. You see it not only in Treachery Times 2, but very much in The Fire and Vengeance, which is the third book, and in some respects in Off the Grid, which is the second book.
Well, in this book, it's complex. You have a lot of different things happening at the same time. So tell us about, tell us a little bit, I think, first, perhaps, about Bobby Hazzard and where this whole storyline comes from.
Well, you know, Koa grew up in a tiny, tiny little place on the northern side of the Big Island. It's actually a place that suffered horribly in one of the tsunamis. And his father was a sugar worker. And the sugar workers had really tough, tough jobs. I mean, a lot of them were Chinese and Korean and Philippine immigrants. They were basically almost, they were like indentured servants. They lived in camps. And they had pretty cruel masters, some of them. And Cullen's father was in that circumstance, and he was harassed by a manager. And ultimately, he died in a horrible accident, which Koa believed to be deliberate. And he was a little bit reckless as a teenager. He followed this man that he thought had arranged his father's death. They got into a fight, and the man died. We're talking 30 years ago, and it was covered up with a pretend suicide. And then 30 years later, guess who comes along? The man's grandson, and who's asking questions about what happened to his grandfather 30 years before. And it provides a wonderful vehicle to play with Koa's emotions when he's confronted by someone who's asking questions about the one event in his life that he cannot tell anyone.
Well, the book has these two levels. It's first, it's a great, just a police series book. All the police procedurals that you weave into the storyline, and then of course we have this moral tale of a right and wrong, and what's going to happen, and how he's going to handle this. And I think readers always, we don't want anything to happen to him. You know, he's become a character that we care so much about, and we feel that struggle that he's going through. And but also the police procedural. You really write a great detective story. And I want to tell people that this is a standalone, so you can read this book without having read anything else before. But once they read this and they really get involved in how you handle the police side of it, people will go back and want to start at the beginning of the series because it's just that enjoyable.
Well, you know, you've picked on two of the most important aspects of the book, but I do want to emphasize one other, which is that Hawaii itself is kind of a character in the book. It interacts actually with the characters in many ways. It helps shape them, and it helps them. And you get this picture of a society that had a different language and a different history from ours. And so that's another one of the themes that carries through all four books and is very important to me because it's part of the reason why I started writing. I found this place so interesting, so fascinating, and its history so fascinating, its geography, its archaeology, its language, its culture, the way people of all of these different nationalities and ethnicities that came together in Hawaii. All of these things fascinated me, and I wanted some way to tell my my story about all of these people and the things that I saw and was interested in. And I decided that doing it through a mystery was the right way to do it because I'd always been a mystery reader. I'd always loved mysteries. And my legal career was, in many ways, a pursuit of mysteries. I mean, you prepare litigation, you need to understand in great detail all of the aspects of the character, the situation, the documents, the activities. And so all of that came together in this desire to tell people about this very unique place. And Koa came out of that early desire to find a way to tell this story, and I just kept developing and developing and developing him. You know, if you think about it, if you take almost any person that you know and you delve deeply enough into their history, their life, their family, their experiences, there's a tale there. And that's what I've done with Koa. I've made him, a real interesting but really human person. And we all have flaws, and Koa just happens to have a big one.
And, you know, the thing, of course, for Hawaiians, Pele is like a real entity, somebody who really controls the volcanoes.
Well, you know, we have right now. There's a Hawaiian volcano observatory that's doing phenomenal work with cutting edge technology to figure out what the volcano is doing and why. But if you think back, even 100 years ago, let alone 1,500 years ago, when the first Hawaiians, the first Polynesians arrived in Hawaii, they didn't understand what caused these massive eruptions, and they didn't understand where all this fire and heat came from. I mean, all you have to do is stand near the volcano, and you're awed by the power of it. And so, in their desire to explain, they attributed all of this to a fire witch whom they call Pele, and who's often pictured as a wizened woman with stringy hair. And the stringy hair has a story because in the volcanic eruption, there are little tiny threads of like glass-like material that's called Pele's hair. The idea was that this volcanic goddess shed her hair, and so she's an important character in Hawaiian mythology. And if you're in a conversation with people about the volcano, they'll talk about Pele as though she's real today, it makes for great myth and great story writing. To use a figure like that. And there are other figures in Hawaiian history that come into play in the books as well.
Well, you know, as I said, I love the book. I love all the characters. I like Piki. Who else?
One of my favorites is Hook Howe, fisherman, who's become a police informer and who's a real character with his own... with his own style and his own loyalty in many ways to the Hawaiian population and to his heritage.
Well, you've developed a wonderful array of characters from Georgina, who is at the crime scene, and all of them. For me, you know, it's like having, you know, been in Hollywood. When I like a book, if it turns into a movie in my head, if I see it as a movie, then I know it's great. Because and that's what happened from the very first time I started reading. As I said, I had never been interested in Hawaii until I read your books. And then I started seeing it. I'd seen really the old Hawaii Five-0television series. I never really watched the new one. But then when I read your books, I think because of the richness of your characters and the history that you put into it, for me, in my mind, it is a television series. It is a streaming video. It's streaming in my head when I'm reading you because you're so descriptive and you really are able to bring the reader to the place. And I love that. I think it's fantastic writing.
Well, thank you very much. It's interesting you refer to it as a movie or streaming because when I'm writing it, that's one of the things I try to do. I try to see the scene in my head, and I try to see detail because it's the detail that makes things interesting.
Exactly. So often people will, writers will just sort of, they'll mention the place, they'll, an overview, but you get into these little details, and it's those details that make the reader say, "Yeah, I can visualize it. I see it. I'm there. I'm in this streaming video, with Bob McCaw." I think it's fantastic.
Well, you're so kind, and you're so nice to have me on and let me talk about my favorite subject, which is the books. I feel like I live with Cullen. He sort of sits on my shoulder. And when I meet new people, I think about, is there some aspect of this person that I can use to interact with Koa? It's kind of all-consuming when you get into it.
Well, I can believe that because when you're reading it, it is all-consuming. And I'm hoping, of course, I know that you're probably working on book 5 or even might be up to 6 already. One will be with an editor. But I get to get you here, I think, every January. You're my first guest of the year. So you are my first guest of the year, 2022. Can you believe it? Wow.
Well, and Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, too. I think this is every time you have been my first guest. You're one of those people, you stick to it, you write, and you get to your deadlines, and you get your books out there. I am so happy that you joined me today to start off the new year the right way with somebody whose books I really admire, and I'm sure you'll be back in a year, or if you get a movie deal, if you get a streaming video deal, if finally they pick you up, one of the companies, and say that they're going to get you on the screen so everybody can see your characters come alive on the screen in addition to in the books. I hope you'll just give me a holler and come on the show and announce it here, okay?
Well, that's very kind of you. I really, really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you. It's wonderful to have such a great fan. I just really appreciate it.
Okay. Well, do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yes. It's Robert V. McCaw, MCCAW. www.robertvmccaw.com.
And they can go there, get more information. This is a standalone. You can start with this book, but once you start with this book, you will go back because you will want to know the entire story of Koa Kane and read some really great writing because you are a fantastic writer.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye now. And again, happy
bye-bye.
New Year.
Happy New Year.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Okay, we're going to go to commercials, and then I have a very special guest coming into the studio at this very moment in time.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I have a guest in the studio. So exciting. Bria Burton. Wow, not only is she a guest in the studio, she is a new member of the Joy on Paper family because she is going to be doing special book buzzes for sci-fi, a futuristic. Oh, it's so exciting. And I am so happy to welcome you to the studio, Bria.
Thank you, Patsy. I am thrilled to be back. Oh. And I was really excited when you suggested that I could do these science fiction book buzzes. I was like, I have a four-year-old. Can I do it? Yes, I'm going to make it work.
Well, I'm so happy because we've had such a wonderful time with Rita Moreau's book buzzes.
Yes.
And which she's done for Cozy Mysteries and Thrillers, and then, of course, Devon Miller, who you introduced to me, and he's doing these wonderful books for children.
Fantastic, yes, yes.
And then here you are now going to take us into the future. So maybe what we'll do, Big Ed in the control room, let's do this first book buzz by Bria, and then we'll come back and talk about it, okay?
Sounds good.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2020 release in audiobook, Sunborn, by author and Nebula finalist Jeffrey A. Carver. Sunborn is book 4 in Carver's The Chaos Chronicles, and Skyboat Media produced this audiobook with stellar narration by Grammy and Hugo winner Stefan Rudnicki. Sunborn is also available in print and ebook. Now, let's download the book buzz. In this highly imaginative space opera, Sunborn picks up where the previous installment left off, with John Bandicoot and his alien companions traveling in a star spanner bubble towards a way station for what they'd hoped was much needed R&R. But instead, they're alerted to impending interstellar destruction from hyperspatial gravity waves of unknown origin. Stars in the Orion Nebula are dying, and an AI at the way station tasks this collection of capable compatriots with averting cosmic disaster. Aboard a space and time manipulating ship called the Longview, Bandicoot and his crew encounter otherworldly beings and multidimensional travelers. Yes, your mind will be stretched. For hard science fiction fans, this book may be a bit far out, even according to the author. But dabbling in fantasy, in my view, enhances the reading experience of this exciting story. Intriguing character dynamics, nonstop action, and point of view shifts that include bringing readers inside the mind of a sentient and singing star are just some of the elements this fantastical tale has to offer. Author Jeffrey A. Carver has been publishing science fiction since the 1970s, including the novelization of the Battlestar Galactica miniseries on Sci-Fi Channel. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
Hey, I like your voice. It's great. You have the right... You set the tone here.
Oh, good. I'm so glad.
So this is fantastic. So let's talk about this first pick that you...
Sure, yes.
Yeah.
So I mentioned I have a four-year-old. So one of the things... Oh, I'm sorry. I should get in front of the mic.
Yeah, good idea.
One of the things that has helped me a lot with getting reading done is audiobooks. So I get an email from this email called Chirp. So Chirp Audiobooks, they send you discounts on audiobooks every day, I think. And so I'll just check out what the discounts are for some audiobooks. And they have science fiction, fantasy, all kinds. And Sunborn popped up as a new 2020 audiobook release. And I thought, ooh, that sounds good. That sounds fun. Space opera. And so I started listening to it. And I have also listened to this same narrator. His name is Stefan Rudnicki. When I listened to Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card a few years ago. And his narration is fantastic, so just tickles your ears and just wonderful. He does a fantastic job, so I'm listening to this book going, okay, yes, this is what I want to do for my first book buzz. And just had a blast going through this book, and I think a lot of Star Trek influence. There's a team on a spaceship, and there's just these otherworldly beings, and it's just full-on space opera. So it's a lot of fun and a lot of just great adventure with that. You just never know what's coming because all of a sudden a star is talking and singing and they're trying to communicate. So it was a blast. And I had heard of Jeffrey A. Carver, seen some of his books, but this is actually the first of his books that I've read. And I'm going to be reading more of him for sure.
And we're going to invite him here on Joy on Paper.
Yes.
Because I think he will be very excited that he was your first selection.
I hope so. I know he's been writing for a long time and been in the science fiction world, publishing world for a while. So it seemed appropriate to do something modern, but someone who has been doing it for a while.
Okay. Well, I think it's a great selection. And I will also be listening to it because I have really developed this love for listening to Audible books.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not that I do any ironing anymore. in those days when I used to iron, I don't know. You're younger, so you don't remember ironing. I don't think this generation does.
I remember it. I just don't do a lot of it. Even as a kid, I was like, do I have to iron this thing? I don't really want
to.
Parents ironed. So
we ironed our sheets when I was a kid.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my goodness. I could have used Audible books back then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think it was a great choice. And it's going to be a lot of fun to listen to it. But you brought in a whole bunch of books. But, before we talk about maybe we should talk about the new book, which you sent me. Oh, my goodness. It's so much fun. I love this. And you've got this first story. Tell us. It's called The Light Fantastic.
Yes. So what we're talking about is an anthology. And this is the sixth anthology by the Alvarium Experiment, this group of authors that I've been collaborating with for 6 years now. We started with the Prometheus saga, and we had so much fun, we just kept going. So in 2020, as we were looking ahead of what will we do, what will our theme be for 2021, and I believe it was Ken Pelham, who you've had on the show, he, I believe, was the one who said, why don't we make people laugh? People could use a good laugh. So that was the impetus for us to go ahead and do a humor anthology with a speculative twist. So we always have this speculative twist in our anthologies, the science fiction, fantasy element. And we took that just very broad humor premise and everybody ran with it. Everybody went their own direction, which was so fun because you've got the variety of dark satire humor to laugh out loud comedy to tongue in cheek. And
I love it because I'm telling you, and I've told the listeners a few times that I've done with pandemic ebooks. I'm done with it. I can't take any more. I can't read. I can't read them. And when I got the second one, which was a leprosy, I got two leprosy books almost in a row. I didn't need to know that there's a new leprosy.
Right.
I didn't need that. Especially this second book was about a new yellow leprosy, and I thought, oh no. As a matter of fact, I sent to all of the people that I deal with, the big publishers. I said, please stop it. Just send me books, anything to make me happy and smile. And so this, and you sent this to me, and I love it. You have to tell us about your story
because I
thought it was so cool, and about why crickets mean something to you.
Yes. So in my story, you've got an artificial intelligence, and she doesn't behave the way she's supposed to, which is not really a new idea. Obviously, we've seen it a lot in science fiction, but I wanted to try to do something a little twisty, a little different, and so it sort of turned into Groundhog's Day meets Back to the Future meets, any artificial intelligent robot movie. And so, I started with the idea of an AI and just thought, there is so much you can do with AI. And the character Cricket is the artificial intelligence, and she's a hologram. So in the story, the science fiction element is that this creator, her name's Dora, which you find out, spoiler alert, her full name is Pandora. So a little tongue-in-cheek there that Pandora has opened the box, and here comes this artificial intelligence named Cricket. And so Cricket essentially takes on a life of her own, of course, because that seems to be what happens. And I thought, instead of Terminator style, where she just destroys everyone, let's try something, we're going for humor here. Let's try for funny. And so it just, I was laughing as I'm writing it, and I thought, am I going to be the only one who thinks this is funny?
Oh,
I
no.
don't know. It's been neat to see responses from people who did say that they thought it was funny because Cricket, she's writing books as she's so she writes. I'll just give one little spoiler. It's not too much, but she writes a book called How to Be the Kind of People I'm Telling You to Be So That I Don't Kill You All. And so she releases it, and everybody has to read it because she's implanted these neural implants that make everybody have to do what she says. So she's quite a character as an artificial intelligence, and I just had so much fun that it actually blended into my real life, because what I ended up doing as a marketing tool, I had Cricket, so on Facebook, you can create these little avatars, uh-huh. and you can make them look like you. You can kind of get your hair color and eye color and face shape. So I had created this avatar and had this in mind of like, well, maybe I should use this avatar to represent Cricket. And so Cricket became my avatar and took over my Facebook profile.
I noticed that.
If you've been to my,
it's cool. I love it.
I had so much fun doing it too. It was all part of the fun of this. I had her, create a job. She works at it just says works at artificial intelligence. Her cover photo like crosses off my name and writes in red Cricket above it so that people know this is her profile. And she posts things about, articles from artificial intelligence. It'll say things like, we don't need to worry about AI taking over the world. There was an article recently that talked about how that's never going to happen. And Cricket says, so they think, mwahaha. That's the type of things that she does on this Facebook profile. So I essentially have this alter ego now that I get to have so much fun on my Facebook profile. Now, I still do have, she has not taken over my writer page, which is my author fan page, Bria Burton Writer on Facebook. It's just my regular Facebook profile, but anybody can go on there and see it. Yeah, and
I did, and I got such a kick out of it.
Yeah, I try to come up with these clever ideas and see if it lands. Sometimes people like it. Sometimes there's no thumbs up. I'm like, okay, I'll try again tomorrow, see if anybody gets a kick out of this.
Well, I think it's a great marketing tool. It's something, if we ever get back to actually going to events, doing events, attending places where we have thousands of fans coming, uh-huh, you know, like uh-huh. we... BoucherCon, which was, you know, this year was of course a disaster. Mm. What's BoucherCon on Zoom? It's ridiculous, you know. But it's something you can always have this cricket. People will just gravitate to you, and you can give out little crickets. You can. There's so many things you can do with crickets. I mean,
yes,
you're gonna have it's a marketing bonanza, really.
Yes, it's turned into more than I could have imagined. With the ideas just keep coming with her.
Yeah,
she's a lot of fun.
Well, I hope that, you know, she's got just one story in this book that has many stories. How many stories do
so
we have?
So there are 10
but
stories.
I have a feeling maybe she's going to write her own full book.
She may. She could do that.
I think she could do that.
Something that I could see her
you
doing.
You never know. You could find yourself at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
At the computer, and it's really her. And
right, yes. These are the types of things. I did another just gimmicky, but I had fun doing it. I interviewed my robot vacuum for a promotional video on YouTube. So the Roomba vacuum that we have, I did this little interview, and you can see in the video the Roomba moves up and down when it says yes and side to side when it says no. So I put together this little video of, you know, my Roomba vacuum and what it thinks about, living in the house with us, and these little things that it's just like, why not try it? See if it lands for people. And I'm sure keep doing these types of things. And I could see expanding cricket for sure with more.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Now in this book, of course, we have some of the authors I already know, and they've been guests, of course, like Charles Cornell and Ken Pelham. And then a few that, you know, and John Hope has been on the program. I love John Hope. I love the laser hamsters.
That was one of the laugh out loud funny stories. Yes, John Hope has quite the sense of humor. It's great.
So tell us which one. Tell us about at least one of them.
Gosh, I really enjoyed them all. They're so different. That's what's neat is humor can go so many
directions.
Yeah,
I had never heard of Veronica Helen Hart.
Yes,
but
her
Malice.
Her story was quite dark, but had this great tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the ending really surprised me, and I went, ooh, that's clever. And she's been an author. She's a Florida author who I'm sure would love to be on the show sometime as well. She's been writing for many years. And, you know, there's a ghost story in here, The 13th Floor by Scott Michael Powers, also an author in the Orlando area. And just this ghost therapy is happening. And then Charles actually has two stories. Charles A. Cornell, our cover artist, I always have to give him such credit. He does fantastic cover art every time. He just delivers. And so his two stories, Sod's Law is kind of a, you know, junk in space, and this space junkie is trying to, you know, make it big, selling all this space junk, and little does he know that he's going to end up in the center of this black hole. And then Andromeda Calling is right in the middle of the Cuban Missile Crisis, but there's this boy getting bullied, and it's this clever take on what you could do with a bully if the aliens are coming.
Well, I think it was such a great idea to make something humorous, to really actually, for some of them, my jaw was hurting. I was laughing out loud.
Me
I
too.
Love that feeling. Mm-hmm. It's just fantastic. So you've got that.
Yes.
Now you're going to be doing book buzzes. So this is called The Light Fantastic, and it's available online.
On all major platforms. There is a Universal Book Link, and I will have that on my website. So on the briaburton.com, the very first homepage, I have a link to this book on my homepage,
okay,
which takes you to where you can get it on Barnes & Noble and all the ebook variety and Amazon, of course. So it's available all over.
Okay.
And I am doing book signings at the Gulfport Indie Fair. Have you heard of it?
No.
Okay, so third Saturday of every month, I live in St. Pete, down in Gulfport, about 10 minutes south of St. Pete. There is this great little artsy area on Beach Boulevard South in Gulfport, and they set up this Indie Fair market, night market, from 5 to 9 p.m. every third Saturday. So it's going on all year round.
Okay. I will make sure I mention it.
Yes. And we just had a fantastic holiday sale, because normally 5 to 9 p.m. is our time. They expanded it for our December market, and we were there from 1 to 9 p.m. And, people were out shopping. It was great. And it's all outdoors. So that's also nice way to do it. And I set up a booth with, have you had Sheila McNaughton?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to send her to you,
okay,
too.
Okay, well, I'm going to get a lot of people.
Yeah, you're getting line you up for the year.
Yeah, that's it. And then you brought in a bunch of other books. And what did you want to tell us about these books?
Well, so just
a little preview of upcoming things?
Well, that, and being into the science fiction realm and having these book buzzes, I thought there's a few books that, in the midst of reading the more modern and the more recent releases, all the way from bestsellers to local authors, I thought, you know, there's a few science fiction classics that I would like to read. So I went to the Largo Library. I have never been to that library. It is amazing. I take it you've been to
one.
Oh my goodness, I thought, I need to come hang out here more. It is like massive, and it has an entire section of large print. I thought, how cool is that? And they have all these wings in there. So I went a little wild in there. And so I picked up Isaac Asimov's iRobot. I have not actually read this book. I have read a lot of classic sci-fi. This is one that I have not gotten to, so it's on my list of, in the middle of reading for all these book buzzes, I'm going to be getting some classic sci-fi. And then his what he calls the grand godfather of robots, John W. Campbell. So his book, he was publishing in the early 1900s, and he describes science fiction as basically an effort to predict the future on the basis of known facts, culled largely from present-day science laboratories. So I think a lot of science fiction authors draw from these classic authors, right? And we see that influence in a lot of the modern writing. So in the midst of these, I thought, I'm going to do some classic sci-fi reading. Now, I am also reading, C.S. Lewis has a space trilogy. He's highly known for the Narnia books, which are fantasy. Well, some might not know, he also did a science fiction trilogy. And I've got through the second book of the trilogy, just about to start the third book. Oh, my goodness. I could just sit and bask in C.S. Lewis's writing. His wordsmithing is phenomenal, and he's so deep philosophically, and obviously there's faith-based elements, and it's just, beautiful writing. It takes me a while to read these kind of things, because I just like to sit and absorb some of the paragraphs.
I know.
I don't know if you do the same thing, because you got a lot of books to get through.
Particularly C.S. Lewis. He was really one of the first that I read in that genre. You know, that's actually, I think, the first one, and when I read that, you're right. How he uses words, and it's a marvel. You do stop and sometimes go back and read a paragraph again, and you say, they're just words, but he puts them together
so beautifully. Yes, and something so many authors aspire to is to have that kind of gifting with your craft and working toward that, and obviously having these grand masters is a great starting point, especially for any science fiction fans or readers or writers listening. These are some great books to find out where some of these tropes even come from. I mean, they started somewhere. So you can go all the way back to Frankenstein, one of the original, you know, and it falls in the horror genre. But really, it's also science fiction.
Yeah.
Because Dr. Frankenstein is in a laboratory creating something based on the science that he, you know, has of the day. And then we've got our Mary Shelley taking that a step further of what if we could reanimate? And it's just neat to see the origins of some of these tropes that now turn into these wonderful modern classics.
Well, you are fantastic. I think you've done a wonderful job. I'm looking forward to it. Every month we're going to have I know a wonderful book buzz from you, and I really want to tell my listeners, Bria is so talented. Her writing is so good.
Thank you.
And it's just always so enjoyable. And there's a whole collection, if you go on Amazon, of sort of one-off, the short versions of the books.
Yes.
Explain that.
Our Alvarium Experiment group of authors, we're a group of about, almost 30 of us now. Not everybody produces a story each anthology, so it's like a handful of us, about 10, will do each anthology. And we initially launch these stories as individual Kindle singles. So 99-cent story. You can basically dip your toe in and sample a story before you buy the whole anthology or purchase several of these 99-cent stories. So each story that I've contributed to these anthologies is available as a 99-cent Kindle book. Yeah. On Amazon, and I have an Amazon author page. Yeah. You can see all the stories.
All of them.
And I have other genres I write in as well.
you're fantastic. You're fantastic.
Thank you.
And, of course, as I said, I will invite them all.
We'll
have a busy year.
Eventually we'll get everybody in here.
And again, thank you so much for joining Joy on Paper.
I look forward to February coming up with the next one.
You are a joy, and... wow, this time has gone so fast.
It has.
Can you believe it's 2022? Just in your own life, how's everything coming?
Oh, it's great. Now that Luke is preschool age, he's in a couple days of preschool. Next year he'll be in VPK, which my mind is a little bit... Talk about science fiction blowing your mind. Looking at my child growing before my eyes blows my mind as well.
I remember when he was born and I... wanted to tell you that I have a special book for him.
Oh my goodness.
It's a photo arc, ABC photo arc, and the photographer, Joel Sartore, was on my program. It's a National Geographic book. It is one of the loveliest books.
Is it one of the Nat Geos?
It's a Nat Geo. As you know, I love Nat Geo, as I have Nat Geo. And that's a gift for Luke because I knew that he was just at that age.
Too sweet. And
I love Nat Geo for everybody. You know.
Yes. Oh, this is fantastic.
If you don't have a child in your life to give a book to, there are so many wonderful Nat Geo books that you can just order online and have it sent directly to a children's hospital.
Oh, yes.
The children's hospitals can't share books anymore.
Mm.
They used to be able to share books between the children.
Right.
They can't share the books, and they are very short on books. So even if you just send one book, just send it to your local children's hospital or Shriners or St. Jude's.
What a wonderful thing. Yeah.
The time is up, and I am so happy that you came into the studio today.
Thank you, Patsy.
And everybody, remember what I always say. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book, like Bree recommended today. And streaming video. My goodness, Jack Reacher's coming February 4th. I can't believe it, finally.
Oh,
yes. That's exciting. And, of course, we might... find somebody having a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. My sister spent the week, she's almost done, with book 12, where finally Lee Barrett gets married. My sister, she is hogging that book. She won't let it out of her hand until she finishes it. Everybody, say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Big Ed. Happy New Year to you. And he saluted me, and I saluted him because I should have been a general. Oh, I would, or a starship captain. I would have been great.
There you go.
That would have been it. Because I like to boss people up. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Patsy.
Happy New Year, Bria.
Happy New Year to you.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
The Only in America Minute with Bill